Well, Aparna had the genuinely difficult job, in part because no one knows what my title or my job means. I was told that I was to be the macro synthesizer. And as I've said to people, you know, that has about as much meaning to me as, oh, particle accelerator. You know, I mean, I know what the words mean in a very loose sense, but they indicate almost nothing to me except something fairly close to incomprehensible. So after talking with several people, I decided that I had a new way of this, defining this, which is to say my job is really to be a constructive provocateur. And what I mean by that is several people involved in organizing the conference said to me, try to pull out some of the debates. Understand that when we're talking about any social movement or political organization that means to be a dynamic, growing, healthy one, it's got to figure out ways of having the internal discussions and debates that it needs. And so in that spirit of trying to identify some of those areas, I've tried, in terms of the issues that Aparna and I heard coming up in the workshops and so on, to do a little bit of that. And I'll preface that maybe with a bit of a general observation, because one of the themes that percolated around a number of the presentations in the plenary this morning, but also came up in several discussions, is that in many ways the global justice movement is many-layered. There isn't just a single movement with a single organizational structure, one common set of institutions, and a single sort of political program or discourse, as it's often fashionable to say nowadays. And clearly there is, in one mobilization after another, there's clearly a tension that exists between different layers of this movement. And again, it came up particularly in some of Jaggi Singh's comments this morning. On the one hand, there have been advocates associated with non-governmental organizations, NGOs, and leaderships of very, very large North American and Western European trade unions, on the one hand, whose approach over a whole number of years has tended to be towards getting labor and social movements a position at the discussion tables in order to incorporate social clauses, environmental clauses, and so on. But on the other hand, there's also been, and this is often what's captured, of course, the media imagery and headlines, there's also been the more radical grassroots direct action movement that's taken to the streets. And there are obvious tensions between these different layers of the movement, and I think that's clearly where some of the major points of debate and discussion that I'll be summarizing in a minute come from. One of the best sort of assessments and commentaries on the Seattle events, in my opinion anyways, concludes by way of saying at the end that what made the Seattle mobilizations against the World Trade Organization talk so significant was that, and I'm paraphrasing, not that I have in front of me, but I'll give you a direct quote in a second, that the staid approach of NGOs and trade union leaders had been, at least for a couple of days, supplanted by what he describes, and this is a direct quote, supplanted by insurgency from below. And it's that notion of insurgency from below that I think captures a lot of the areas of debate that I'll be alluding to. So it seems to me that there are seven main areas that I want to really quickly just touch on for purposes of our discussion. One thing which comes up over and over again, and it does in the very framing of the conference that the organizers did, is the debate between taming capitalism or overturning it. And clearly that's a major discussion, and all kinds of strategic and tactical issues about what you're trying to do when you protest a World Bank meeting or a WTO meeting or those sorts of things. Most recently, the Summit of Americas in Quebec City for many of us, and so on. And related to that, of course, is a whole set of analytical and political questions. Do we think that the problem is specific policies associated with specific political parties and leaders, or do we have what we might describe as a systemic critique? Do we see the globalizing agenda as in some way inherent in capitalism as a system? And obviously the way you answer that question leads you in very, very different directions as to whether you think taming capitalism or overturning it is the objective. Secondly, and these are obviously all interrelated, secondly, of course, then becomes the one of political approach and orientation. And I think, in a summary form, we can put it this way. Do we see the principal task as to lobby power or to confront it? And I think, again, that debate that I'm describing really tends to break down very much that way, between lobbying power or confronting power. And sometimes we see the very dramatically, even in quite sharp splits within these actions between those who see their mission as to lobby power and those who are much more oriented to confronting it. And that clearly raises what I'm trying to set out as the third question, which has really dominated a lot of post-Quebec City debates around the broad left. And I'll put it this way. Is militant direct action the heart of the movement, or is it an irritant to be reined in? And a lot of the post-Quebec discussion and debate has focused on that. As I say, is militant direct action really the heart of the movement? Is it really absolutely central to what the global justice movement does? Or is it an irritant, the sort of product of youthful exuberance and irresponsible anarchists, those sorts of formulations that needs to be contained, reined in, controlled, and so on. Fourth, and this is the only time I'm actually going to quote from a book. Fourth is the question of what we might describe as NGO politics and where they fit. That is to say, non-governmental organization politics and where they fit. And because, as I said, I think my job is to be a provocative, constructive provocateur, I'll actually give you a couple of passages from a book which I think needs to increasingly become a point of reference for a lot of us having these discussions, even though, you know, I'm not uncritical of it by any means, but it's the new book by James Petras and Henry Veltmeyer called Globalization Unmasked. Because they devote a chapter in their book, and I think this is slightly provocative, but it's called NGOs in the Service of Imperialism. And they're very, very sharp in a whole series of criticisms they mobilize. They, in fact, take one subsection of the of their book called Class Solidarity versus NGO Solidarity with Foreign Donors. And essentially what they're trying to say in very, very sharp sorts of terms is, look, we think these non-governmental organizations are simply too tied to, too reliant on their donor bodies to be capable of building the sort of class solidarity, that's the term they prefer, against imperialism. And again, they prefer the word imperialism to globalization for reasons that that they set out. And they, in fact, draw quite extensively on their own discussions with activists throughout Asia and Latin America. They say, most peasant leaders from Asia and Latin America that we have spoken to complain bitterly of the divisive and elitist roles that even the progressive NGOs play. The NGOs want to subordinate the peasant leaders to their organizations and to lead and speak for the poor. They do not accept subordinate roles. And so clearly that question, which again came up in the morning's presentations, but also I think came back through a couple of the workshops. And that takes me to the fifth, and again I say these are all pretty much interconnected, which is, and Aparna I think actually hit on this a couple of times in her summaries of the workshop sessions, do we imagine those of us who are involved in struggles in the North, and we'll use these political geographic terms for the moment, recognizing all of the kinds of qualifications that Aparna pointed to, do we see the role of activists and those involved in the global justice movement in the North as teaching the South or learning from resistance in the South? And here again, I'll sort of be concrete. I think a lot of the questions which are being posed for us are things like this. Do we think that a global justice movement here, for instance, has to really study, learn from, and dialogue with movements like the Zapatista movement in Mexico, like the landless workers movement in Brazil, which has located hundreds of thousands of people on land which they have seized as part of really popular movements and uprisings in rural areas of Brazil, from the Monsanto Out of India campaign, from the really dramatic strikes that rank-and-file workers in Korea have been waging, particularly in the aftermath of the Asian meltdown of 1997, where, in fact, you know, people in the mainstream media here complain about activists who go to the wall in Quebec City with bandanas and swim goggles and these sorts of things. Well, of course, this sort of dress is just customary for the worker activists and student activists who've poured into the streets in front of Hyundai and Daewoo and the universities in Seoul and so on. In other words, do we recognize that there are movements out there which in some respects are much further developed in terms of mass organizing than we are, or not, in terms of the kind of solidarity work that that we do? And then, of course, what kinds of conclusions do we draw from that? Because one of the points, again, which is filtering through all these discussions, is it enough to have contacts at the level of NGOs and trade union leaderships, or do we need to build much more independent grassroots networks? This morning, Jaggi was talking about what he thinks People's Global Action is trying to do, but obviously there are other sorts of examples that people might use. The sixth point, then, and again, Aparna touched on this several times, ought the focus of the movement to be exclusively on the big international events, the trade talks and those sorts of things, or ought the actions to link to local protest and resistance? And again, many of you will know this discussion is happening in the global justice community right now about the kind of focus that there will be for actions in the fall in this city. The Ontario Coalition Against Poverty having called for major mobilizations on the financial district of Toronto on October 16th, but at the same time on November 9th, the WTO is meeting in Qatar. And where should a focus for activists be who are trying to link the globalizing agenda, on the one hand, to local sites of oppression, resistance, and protest, on the other? Do we just take an agenda, or do we largely take an agenda dictated by where the talks are happening globally, or do we have an agenda that is much more closely linked to the local struggles and so on that are being defined and set out by activists on the ground in communities around us? And in terms of analytical issues, of course, that raises things like, are we going to develop very concrete sort of analysis which links issues that OCAP tries to raise, homelessness in Toronto, to the globalization agenda? Are we going to try to look at the interconnections here in terms of issues like the assault on social housing, privatization, and so on? And then seventh, I'll pick up on, and I'm not sure, John, that I got your words exactly right, but a phrase that John Saul used in the morning, which I thought in many ways spoke to, and John said to me later, you know, we've got to get to practice when we were chatting in between sessions. John used an expression, I think, which was about the need to develop the internationalist wing of the local left, or words very close to that, in any case, in his presentation. And that, of course, raises for us what it means to be internationalist, anti-imperialist, anti-racist in a city like Toronto at the moment. The ways in which we would try to translate the international commitments at two levels. One is building solidarity with those struggles of the South that need that solidarity from us, where we have an obligation to extend them the support and solidarity they need. But on the other hand, also recognizing that internationalist, anti-imperialist, anti-racist agenda resonates in communities here. It resonates in communities of color in particular, and there are all kinds of ways in which we might be talking about and thinking about what having an internationalist wing of a local left could mean in those regards. Again, I'll throw out two examples, but I'm sure many of you would have others. Many of you know, for instance, although it's probably worth saying, because it occasionally gets lost in media furors around big actions and so on. But many of you know that OCAP does a lot of work on immigration. They do a lot of casework, and particularly so in the last year or so in Toronto with activists from communities in this city, from the Somali and the Afghani communities. And they've won a lot of immigration hearings and refugee hearings and so on. But often what they do after they go in, they make an initial presentation and so on and so forth, they'll actually organize an occupation of an immigration office. They'll bring 70, 100 people in, and they will say, we don't leave until the hearing is set. We don't leave until the hearing happens, and so on. What ways, if we're talking about rebuilding an internationalist left locally, do we connect with things like that? The flyers for the demonstration, Mel Must Go Rally Against Racism, have been handed out today. How do we make sure that those sorts of issues are a priority for the internationalist wing of the local left, and so on? First Nation communities, that is to say, there are issues around Aboriginal housing and health on the streets of this city, of Toronto, for instance, that the left often is very, very awkward in handling or barely deals with. These are all, it seems to me, part of what it means to talk about building that. And the final point I'll make is that I think, you know, one of the organizations that has tried to play a role in helping with this event is the Rebuilding the Left Initiative. And it seems to me that all of these questions are really central to what it means to rebuild a left that is activist, extra-parliamentary, internationalist, and anti-racist in its commitments and its orientations. And I think we need, therefore, to grapple with these debates. I hope I've been a little bit provocative in setting them out. I didn't want to pretend for a minute, of course, that I had all the answers to these things, although obviously I have my own biases where some of them are concerned. So, thanks.